Okay. Honestly, probably after I said the first question, you're like, okay, well, that's not it. So whatever the other question is, that's the correct one. Now, the second question is obviously a far superior question to the first question. However, this was a little bit of a trick question that I asked you, because in reality, neither of these questions is the correct question. Let me rephrase that. Neither of these questions is the optimal question that you could ask yourself. So, why? Take a moment and see if you can figure out what's the problem with these two questions, right? So here are the two questions, right? Why are all women gold diggers? How can I make more money so this doesn't happen to me again? What's the problem with those two questions? The issue is that these questions both presuppose that the woman left him because he did not have money. But you have zero evidence to support that belief. What was the original statement? What I said was, a woman leaves a man who happens to be broke. I never said she left him because of that. Now, I know you're saying, oh, okay, haha, Knight Rider, cute play on words there, but don't people actually do this all the time? Haven't you ever been in a situation where you've done something like this, right? So maybe a time when you thought you couldn't get a girl because you didn't have enough money. Or maybe there was a time when you thought you couldn't get the partner you wanted because you were too ugly or too fat or too short, too tall, right? Your boobs are too small, or you're black, or you're ginger, or you're well, I mean if that's the case, it's probably true. I mean, like, everyone hates gingers, right? Okay. Or maybe you thought that you were looked over for a job promotion because the manager doesn't like you, or because you haven't been there long enough. The issue is that while some of the time we are correct in our assumption, other times we're completely wrong. Maybe the girl left you because you're a jerk who always assumes that she wants a guy with money. What a concept. Maybe that person didn't want to go on a date with you, not because you're so fat and ugly, but because that person just got out of a horrible long-term relationship and doesn't want to date anyone. Unless you're a ginger. I mean, then she just like that. That's why, right? Or maybe she's not attracted to you because your pheromones match up too closely to her own pheromones and she's genetically repulsed by you. Yeah. Bet you didn't think of that one. That actually happens. That's a real thing. Maybe your boss actually wanted to promote you into that management position. Maybe the boss does like you more, and they think you're better at your job, but they don't think you'd be an effective manager. Or maybe you're so good at your job that they cannot promote you because they don't have anyone to replace you with in your position. That happens sometimes. Now, of course, you know, sometimes she did leave you because you're broke. Sometimes she doesn't want to date you because you're fat. And you did get looked over for that promotion because your boss wanted to promote his buddy. The point is, you don't want to ask questions which contain presuppositions unless you're 100% sure that it's correct. So, back to our example with the broke guy and the woman leaving him. What is the correct question to ask first? I think a good one to start out with is, why did she leave me? Here's a little conversation, okay, that this person could have with him or herself. All right. He would say, she left me because I'm broke. And by the way, I mean, this is kind of like playing like a devil's advocate with yourself. You wouldn't like literally do it this way, but I'm trying to get the example, trying to get the point across of how you kind of need to fight your own assumptions. All right. So, you'll say, she left me because I'm broke. And then you'd say, okay, why else would she have potentially left you? Well, because I didn't take her out to do nice things. Were there affordable nice things that you did regularly for her? Like, did you cook her dinner at home and eat it by candlelight? Or maybe go for hikes and have a picnic? Well, I mean, I used to do stuff like that for her, but not lately.
Do you think that maybe that contributed?
Well, I guess a little.
Why else may she have left you?
Well, I mean, she said I yelled at her too much.
Do you think that may have contributed?
Probably.
Was there any evidence that she left you because you did not have money, or do you just think that was the issue?
Well, sometimes she'd say that she wanted to, you know, do something nice that was out of our price range, you know, like go on a nice vacation or something.
Would you like to go on nice vacations?
Well, yeah, of course.
Did your desire to go on those nice vacations make you love her any less?
No, of course not.
Do you think it's possible that she could also desire to do nice things and have nice things, but that would not affect her love for you?
Now, obviously, like I said, you know, you don't literally speak like this to yourself, but that's how you want to question your assumptions.
So, let's get on to the active part of the day. This is where I need you to play along during the program. Let's go ahead and put some of what we've learned into action. Let us practice controlling our focus. I want you to think of something that is either going on in your life right now or something which recently happened that maybe isn't such a good thing. It can be in any area, a money issue, a job issue, relationship issue, physical health issue, doesn't matter. Okay, so think of something which is not a good thing. Go ahead and do that now. Okay, if you need some more time, go ahead and pause the audio. Now, I want you to ask yourself this question. What can I learn from this, which will make my life better in the future? What can I learn from this, which will make my life better in the future? Now, I want you to take a moment and just think of at least one answer to that question. One stipulation. The answer to this question cannot be nothing. Or it won't. Okay? You actually have to try. So go ahead and do that now. What can you learn from this, which will make your life better in the future? Okay, if you need some more time, go ahead and pause the audio. Now, what I want you to do is to focus on something positive about your life, which you haven't thought about recently. So, something positive, something that you should appreciate and be thankful for it being a part of your life. So, this could be something like having a roof over your head, right? What a concept, okay? Living in a safe neighborhood if you do, having a supportive partner, or having good health, or having the ability to spend your time however you'd like, or living in a country where you are free. Remember what I said earlier? It's like even if you're in poverty in a developed country, in a free country, you are miles ahead of the people who are in the best situation in some remote island of Africa, right? So go ahead and think of something which is fantastic in your life that you don't think about often, and I want you to take a moment and just have gratitude and appreciation for that. So go ahead, think of that thing now. Okay, so did you figure it out? All right, now, okay, if you didn't, obviously pause, but now I want you to focus on how much you appreciate that, okay? Bring that to the front of your conscious mind, and I want you to appreciate that that is a part of your life.
Okay, so here's your assignment for today. I want you to think of someone who has had a positive influence on your life, someone who you appreciate and are happy that they are a part of your life. This can be a parent, a significant other, a former significant other, a good friend, an old friend, a coach, a teacher, a boss. Most of you probably are not going to be choosing your boss, but you know, some people love their boss, right? Or it can even be someone that you don't know. Right? Maybe an author, you love reading their books, and you know, if you're having a bad day, you just want to pick up, you know, and get lost in that story and it takes you to another world. Or maybe a business person who you look up to, a celebrity who inspires you, all right? So pick someone, and I want you to reach out to that person. All right, you can call them, text them, tell them in person. If it's someone you don't know personally, you know, you can contact them on social media or email. And I want you to contact whoever that person is, and I want you to tell them thank you. Tell them how much of a positive influence they have had on your life and why they have had a positive influence on your life. And then tell them that you appreciate them. So, that's your assignment today. It should only take a few minutes. It's a really easy one, but I want you to take a moment of appreciation for something that maybe you don't always take a moment to appreciate. All right, recognize something positive in your life. And then I want you to continue having an amazing day and really accomplish something. Put in some work in an area which needs your attention. And keep your focus on the positive. Look to focus on empowering things. And if you are looking at a not so empowering event, you can still ask yourself powerful, positive questions, which will give you a fantastic new interpretation of how that event will ultimately improve the quality of your life. Remember, you cannot control yesterday. You cannot control tomorrow, but you can control today. So live by design.
Welcome to day 7. That's the end of it, man. Week 1. You did it. We're rounding up that first week on our 30-day program. Congrats, man. So, hey, yesterday we talked about the importance of focus. Today we are going to talk about beliefs and desires. So let's get right into it. If you could choose only one of the following, which would you choose? Money, fame, love,
or adventure? All right, let's do that one more time. If you were guaranteed amazing things in only one of these areas, so you could experience abundance and greatness in one of these areas, which one would you choose? Money, fame, love, or adventure? Now, I don't know which one you chose personally, but I do know that some people may choose, they might choose money. All right, they said for sure, oh, hey, I need money. That's all I need. I got to have my money. That's the most important thing in my life. If I have money, I'll be happy. But then I know some of you said, hey, man, money is great, but I want the fame. I want everyone to know my name. I want to be in the movies and walk down the red carpet. That will bring me happiness. Yet still others said, hey man, money and fame, they're great, but that's nothing without love. What's the purpose of life if you don't have someone you deeply love to share it with? And then a couple of you guys said, yeah, I know all you civilized folks are having fun over there, but I need me some adventure. I need to explore the deep blue sea and climb the tallest mountains on the earth and cut through the Amazon jungle. And some of you really crazy explorers out there are talking about outer space, all right? Now, there's no right or wrong answer to this. It's just a different set of beliefs and desires for different people. So tell me, do you think a person whose absolute goal in life is to feel deeply in love with someone else, that is their number one priority, do you think they might make different life decisions than a person who, say, chooses money as their number one priority? I know, you're like, duh, right? See, that's the little bit of what we're going to be talking about today. Most of these things and similar things are pleasurable experiences for most people. Most people like money and love and at least some degree of adventure and fame. Now, of course, how much adventure a person desires will vary greatly, as will fame. Not everybody wants to be known by millions, but most people find pleasure in being well regarded and respected in their line of work, or say a hobby that they have. And that is fame, it's just on a smaller scale. The difference is each individual will value each scenario with a different level of intensity. So, let's play around for a bit to try and get a feel for this. Let's say hypothetical person 1 desires to have money at a level 9 on a scale from 1 to 10. They desire to have fame on a level 6, love on a level 6, and adventure on a level 8. Let's say this is a man with a girlfriend, and he was offered a job overseas, which would give him a 50% pay increase, but his girlfriend doesn't want to move. Knowing nothing else about this man or this situation, do you think this man would leave his girlfriend for the job? More likely than not, he would, because he desires both money and adventure more than love. So he'll be getting the pay increase, and the type of person who is an adventurer would get excited about the prospect of moving overseas. Okay, how about this one? Money, level 9. Fame, level 6. Love, level 7. Adventure, level 7. So this man has a decent paying job, you know, pays a little bit better than average, but nothing crazy. And he starts dating a girl who decides she wants to move from their small town in South Carolina to Los Angeles to be an actress. What do you think here? Do you think that guy will go with her? This one's a little bit harder because although money is his highest desire, but he's only making decent money, right? He's not making great money. and he could probably go to Los Angeles and make almost as much money doing something else over there. Plus, even though the other desires are less, when you add up his desire for love and his moderate desire for fame and his moderate desire for adventure, all of those things combine, right? Because, you know, of course, maybe he's not trying to be an actress. Well, I mean, or an actor. I guess he could be trying to be an actress. But although he's not trying to do that, he'll still get a little bit of a mental high from his girlfriend going out and going to the auditions and trying to get in the movies, right? You can live a little vicariously through that. So he will enjoy that process even if he's not doing it personally. Plus, he may think to himself, well, she's doing it, I can try it too. I'll do my day job, I'll enjoy that, I'll make my money, but then on the side, I can, you know, go to some auditions, or maybe I can do some writing, or I can direct a short, etc., etc. Plus, you have that adventure of going from a small town in South Carolina to a big city like Los Angeles. And that's fun, that's adventurous. So I'd say that this man goes. It's not guaranteed, but I say that more likely than not, even though money is his highest priority, I'd say all the other things combined would make it so he goes. However, let's switch it up a little bit, right? If you were to change his income from decent, kind of, you know, it's pretty good, but it's not great, and he could probably go somewhere else and get a similar wage or almost as much money. If we change that to high income, so he's got a good job over there in wherever, you know, South Carolina or whatever it is, he's got a, you know, he's making money over there, and it's not the sort of thing that can transfer over, I'd bet he stays. Or, say this for example, say the girl, instead of wanting to move to Los Angeles to be an actress, she just wants to move from one small town to another small town, like where her mom lives or something. In that situation, he's not getting nearly as much from the adventure or from the fame. So then it just, you know, then it boils back down to the love versus the money. So even if he's still only making the decent money, I bet he is not going to give it up if there's not that added little bit of the adventure and the fame. Now, you know, the fame, money, love, and adventure, these are just random examples, a few that I chose, but this concept applies to everything like this. Can you see how our desires can influence our life's decisions? Now, it works the other way around too. Which one of these would cause the most pain to you? Okay, so which one would cause the most pain to you? Anger, depression, betrayal, or moderate physical pain? Once again, which one of these four would you want to avoid most? Anger, depression, betrayal, or moderate physical pain. Now, just as a little FYI, I say moderate physical pain because the truth of the matter is if it was severe physical pain, that would be number one for all of us because of the hierarchy of needs, right? We all have to avoid great physical pain. But if it's moderate physical pain, and I'm not going to define that, I'll let you define it, but if it's moderate physical pain, then that can actually vary for different people. And some people, they'll want to avoid that, you know, number one, and some people will want to avoid other things at a number one level. Now, I find that this one will vary a little bit more from for men, but I find with women, this question in particular is a little bit more consistent with what the number one negative feeling that they try to avoid. Do you want to take a guess what that is? Betrayal. That's because most women associate betrayal with a man cheating on them. Or, yeah, I mean, if you're a lady, but you like other ladies, then with a lady cheating, you know what I'm saying? Yo, we're PC up in here. We're PC on Live By Design. Yo, look, I'm cool with the gays. All right? The gays love me, okay? Look, we gotta have a little fun. We gotta have a little fun, right? We're spending 30 days together. Let's have a little bit of fun. Everybody's in on the jokes. Everyone's in on the jokes. So, look. But what is it for you? Okay, is it betrayal or is it anger, depression, or physical pain? All right, now what I want you to do is go ahead and place a number on a scale from 1 to 10 on all four of those, 10 being a feeling that you want to avoid at all costs. You would do anything to avoid that negative feeling. Okay, so anger. What's your number on 1 to 10 for anger? Okay, how about depression? Pick number 1 through 10 for depression. All right, how about betrayal? Betrayal, he betrayed you. What's that, 1 to 10? And moderate physical pain. You can define it yourself, but go ahead. Not 1 to 10, moderate physical pain. Just like how your levels of desire for pleasure points can often influence how you live your life, so can your levels of desire to avoid painful points. A person with a desire to avoid physical pain on a level of, say, 5 or 6 might avoid things like skydiving or contact sports like football. If you bump that number up to, say, around 8, they might stop doing most forms of physical activity. You know, they might stop doing things like surfing or boogie boarding or maybe even swimming in the ocean or doing things like any type of a strenuous hike, you know, hiking up anything like a mountain or any sort of a trail that's kind of off pavement. Now, what do you think would happen if you bumped that avoidance desire all the way up to number 10? Do you think that person would drive a car? Do you think they'd, or even if they did because they had to for whatever reason, I mean, do you think that person would enjoy driving? Don't you know some people who really don't enjoy driving? They're just scared that they're going to get hurt. Now, whether that be because they think they're a bad driver or they're fearful of other people, whatever it is, I mean, don't you know some people who they just hate driving? They do not like driving. And I know a couple of people who don't have driver's licenses. They refuse to drive. Now, what about betrayal? Do you think a guy who wants to avoid betrayal on a level of 5 or 6 might get a little jealous of his girlfriend maybe talking to another attractive guy? If you bump that up to 8, do you think that he might start, say, going through his girlfriend's cell phone texts and social media history to see if he, you know, if she's cheating on him, if he can catch her anywhere? What if you bump that all the way up to number 10? Do you think that he might avoid getting into a relationship altogether to avoid the anticipated pain of being cheated on? Once again, don't you know people like this? Don't you know people who are so scared of being hurt in a relationship that they just avoid being in a relationship in the first place? See, this is just like pain and pleasure, but we're putting some names on it, okay? We're also weighing them against each other to look for probable outcomes. For example, that guy who may look through his girlfriend's phone at, say, a level 8 of desire to avoid betrayal, well, what if when he was a kid, he had parents who always, like, they searched his room, they read his journals, they looked through his phone and his emails, they never trusted him. And from a very young age, this boy felt totally violated in terms of just his private space and developed an extremely strong belief in respecting one's privacy. So even if a decade later he had a horrible experience where his, you know, he found out his girlfriend was cheating on him and then that raised his desire to avoid betrayal to, say, level 8, if his belief that you should respect one's privacy is at a level 10, now do you still think he is going to look through her phone? Probably not.
This is a pretty cool concept because it can explain why a lot of people take the actions they do. It can help you understand why people may make a decision which to you seems dumb, but to them makes complete, at least emotional sense, if not intellectual sense. And can you guess what most people's priorities are? I mean, if I was to ask you about your mom or your dad or your brother, sister, best friend, significant other, or child, do you think that you could get a, you know, just guess, a general idea as to his or her priorities? Go ahead, just pick someone, right? Pick someone close to you that you know well, family member, you know, close friend, something like that, significant other. Okay, so go ahead, just pick someone. Okay, you got one? All right, so answer this. Does this person care more about stability or spontaneity? All right, stability or spontaneity? Do they care more about success in their career? Or if, you know, if they're a kid, maybe say success in school, or their love life? Success in their career or success in their love life? Or if they're really young, I don't know what you would say for that. I guess it would be friends if they're like really, really young. All right. Would they rather have more money or more free time? More money or more free time? Now, if some of these are different than maybe how you would answer the questions, meaning how your preferences are, then doesn't it make sense that they would take different actions than you would as well? Now, here's where things get interesting. Have you ever known someone who did something out of character? Now, this is a relatively common thing after, say, a near-death experience, like a car crash, or perhaps during a midlife crisis, or some sort of a major life turning point, okay? And then they start behaving in ways that you aren't used to. What happened? If a person who was completely 100% concerned about security, comfort, safety, and then they turn 40 or turn 50 and all of the sudden like wants to quit his job, get divorced, travel around the world. What happened? What changed? The priorities changed. The beliefs changed. It is not uncommon for a person to wake up one day and realize that half of their life is over and come to the immediate realization that that their time on this planet is dwindling away. And all of a sudden, their number one priority becomes living life with absolute passion. And sometimes in this circumstance, that can be a bad thing. I mean, if that's all you're doing and you quit your job and you avoid your finances and you leave your family, I mean, to you, that's complete passion, but to the outside world, maybe that's not such a good thing. The opposite happens too. Have you ever had, say, a female friend who was a total party animal, going out every night, getting slammed, hammered, doing drugs, doing guys, and then she got pregnant? Mm-hmm. Yeah, priorities change real quick, don't they? And for a good, or at least let's hope the priorities change. Sometimes they don't change, and that can be a bad thing. But, you know, in most situations, that young lady's priorities is going to change rather drastically in a rather short period of time, and for a good reason. And just like your desires can change, sometimes your desires can be in conflict with each other. That's when self-sabotage can come into play. Here's a few examples. Maybe you'll even relate to one or two. I don't know. I know I do. Okay, now, look, what happens if you have a strong desire to make a lot of money? I'm talking like money. I'm talking like gangsta money. You'd be like, I got money, all right? But you also have a strong desire to avoid failure.
Okay, particularly that short-term failure is what you fear. It's the, you avoid failing right now. Do you think your desire to avoid failure could inhibit you from attempting to start the business that you want to start? Men may relate to this next one a little bit more. What if you want a woman who is 100% committed to you? You just want a deep, passionate relationship with her, and you want her to be 100% into you and love you and loyal to you. But you also want to have sex with other women. Okay? Listen, you can deny it all you want. I know there's some brothers out there who are like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. All right. You think that might create some problems? Ladies, here's one for you. Okay. What if you want a successful career, but you also want to raise your own kids? That's kind of difficult, isn't it? And I admire women who want to be stay-at-home moms, because that's the most difficult dang thing in the whole world, to be around a kid 24 hours a day. And I admire women who want to make it in their career. But geez, to do both, like, how do you even do it? That's an extreme, it's so difficult to be good at one. To be successful at both is so much harder. And some women are forced to choose. And it's unfair, it's unfortunate. But aren't those two desires, aren't they conflicting? Doesn't that make it a little bit more difficult for you? And here's a thought. Where did your desires, okay, where did your beliefs even come from? Do you think that maybe your parents' beliefs and desires, you know, maybe those influenced you a little bit? Or maybe even the opposite. Maybe you saw how they were, and they were, you know, one way, and you're like, now I'm going to be the complete opposite. But that's still influence, isn't it? Here's an interesting statistic. Did you know that 90% of all children born to a Mormon family stay Mormon? But this isn't just about Mormons. Did you know that also exactly 90% of children born to a Protestant family stay Protestant? And 87% of children born to a Jewish family stay Jewish? Mind you, the majority of the remaining percentage are children who ultimately just left organized religion altogether. Only a very small percentage of these children grow up and actually switch from one organized religion to another. And although I wasn't able to find any statistics on it, I would imagine that a reasonable portion of those who did switch was due to marriage. So the statistics are clear. Most people are not consciously choosing their own religious beliefs. It's just something they were raised into. Now, look, I'm not trying to make a point on religion. I'm trying to use it as an example to illustrate how most people do not choose their beliefs, whether it be religious or anything else. It is something which is passed down from their parents. Whether that be through positive association or negative association, meaning it's my parents did this and I agree with them, or there was something that was awful about your parents and therefore you went the complete opposite, direction, you're still being influenced by your parents at a very young age when your critical thinking capacity isn't necessarily all the way there. So, if we looked at a hypothetical situation, and a child was born into a family which was very close, one of those, those big extended families, like that family from My Big Fat Greek American Wedding, or my girlfriend likes it, but like the Big Fat Greek Wedding, right? And I was there when she watched, and there's all the Jewish people or whatever, and they're like, they're having fun, right? It's like one of those families, the big extended families, and like they all live in the same area, and like the grandparents are always babysitting the kids, and everyone's like throwing big family parties, and they go on vacation together, and they celebrate holidays together, and there's just so much love, right? One of those families. Do you think that that child will grow up with a high priority on family? duh, right? Now, let's look at a child who was raised by parents who, say, owned a business together. After school, instead of going home every single day, he'd go to the family business for a few hours. He'd help out with the family business every single day. The parents train the child on a daily basis on how to run a successful business. The parents inspired that child to think big and work hard to achieve his or her dreams. The parents encouraged him to take risks and not be afraid of failure. Tell me, do you think this child will grow up to possess a different set of values? Now, of course, this is not determinant. There are always exceptions to the rule. I mean, it's not even a rule, right? It's just a statistic. It's what's going to happen most of the time. But here are a couple random thoughts that just came to my head, which I would bet are going to be true from a statistical average standpoint, okay? I'm willing to bet that the business child is more likely to get divorced even if his parents had a loving relationship. Why is this? Well, it's simple. The first person, all that person's number one priority is going to be family. Okay, that does not include divorce. That's the opposite of family. So even if the business kid had an extremely strong parental, you know, their parents were totally in love, his priority of business is going to be as high, if not higher. So therefore, it's just the way that the math works, okay? If you're at a level 10 on being in a great relationship and your level for everything else is at a level 6 or below versus someone else who's at a level 10 for a relationship but also at a level 10 for something else, just the way the math works out, it's gonna bring the average down, okay? So the person who also has another priority that's just, I feel like I'm getting way too into this. Okay, look, let's just move on to the next one. I'm willing to bet the business child is also more likely to end up with more money than the other child. That one is probably kind of obvious why. I'm willing to bet the business child is more likely to move to a large city. That one should kind of also be self-explanatory. Obviously, there's more money in bigger cities, and the person who only wants to have a big, loving family is going to be much less likely to leave the city where he was born because that's where all his family lives. Okay, I'm willing to bet that the big family child is more likely to retain his religious beliefs if, in fact, he was born into a religious family. And once again, that's just because your family is going to influence you more. Okay, if you're around a bunch more people who believe in that and you're very tight into your family, you're going to be a lot less likely to disagree with them on something that is that important to the family unit. I'm willing to bet that the big family child is more likely to have a higher number of children. That one should be kind of self-explanatory. And listen, you could continue to extrapolate this out as much as you'd like. The point is that it's not that any of these situations are better or worse than the other. It's not that it's, oh, look, you should be born into a family unit or you should be born into a unit, you know, that teaches kids how to do the business. That's not the point. The point is to illustrate how most children are not consciously setting their own beliefs and therefore have less control over their actions. The beliefs and priorities we hold is what causes our pain and pleasure, which in turn influences our actions. So if you are not consciously choosing your beliefs and priorities, you in essence are not choosing your own actions. And I'm not even saying that you need to change them. The large family person may be totally 100% happy in his or her life, just as the business person may be completely, totally happy in his or her life. But sometimes beliefs and priorities are passed on to us which do not support us. And we haven't taken the time to really think about it, okay, why am I doing this? And then break it down to a belief or a priority and then ask yourself, hey, where did this come from? Did I choose it? Or is it something that I just grew up with and I haven't questioned it? And then ask yourself if that belief or priority is still relevant to you today, and if it supports you in your goals and in your life and in your relationships. Is it conflicting with anything else? If you could start over with a clean slate, okay, start from scratch and design your own beliefs and priorities, would this one be there, or would you change it? You have to consciously control your desires, or they will take control of you. Now, here's the next point. Let's say we have a desire to increase our income. Okay, well, what determines when we have achieved that desire? If you give someone a penny, that technically increases their income. From a literal technical standpoint, that achieves the desired outcome. But obviously, most people would, you know, agree that's not really what they were looking for. That's where specific, defined goals come in. But here's the interesting thing. Have you ever set a goal? You know, let's say to lose 10 pounds or make $10,000 in a month, whatever it is. Have you ever set a goal and then you achieve that goal, but you still weren't happy? You still weren't satisfied. Have you ever had that happen? You ever, you know, have an initial desire and at that time you really want it? You're like, oh, that will make me so happy. But then by the time you actually achieved it, you had already pushed your target up twice as far and you hardly got any emotional satisfaction or positivity out of that win, if any. Is it possible that your beliefs not only can raise or lower, but outright change? Have you ever set a goal for yourself and then halfway through the process just woke up one day and realized, I don't even want this anymore? And just like we set up rules for ourselves, we also set up rules for others. Have you ever done that? Have you ever taken a belief that you held and then just assumed that everyone else kind of holds that same belief too, or at least everyone else should hold that belief too? Have you ever had that experience where maybe you're dating someone and, I mean, dude, everything's just like perfect, right? Everything's good. And then someone's like, we should move in together. And, you know, and you're like, yeah. And then later you're like, yeah, no, that was a mistake. All right. A whole new set of beliefs and life values come into play once you're actually living together, right? And then you start fighting over like stupid things that you literally didn't even know was like, it was possible to fight over something like that. Okay, like here's the stupidest fight I've ever gotten into with my girlfriend. We actually had a fight about how we would spend hypothetical money if we had won the lottery. And then beyond that, we got, and has this ever happened to you? We got into a fight about the way we were fighting. See, I came from a family where you speak your mind, all right? You raise your voice. It's okay to yell a little bit. That's just where I came from. Like, you yell a little bit and then you get over and everybody's fine 5 minutes later. She came from a family that has a different set of values and beliefs. She came from a family where you never raise your voice. That's disrespectful. Okay. And that raising your voice and saying some of the types of things that I was saying, that's the worst thing that you could do, right? It's more of those, you kind of just keep it inside and you just walk away from the situation. Okay. Now, did either of us consciously choose those beliefs? Did we just wake up one day, you know, when we turned 18 and we moved out on our own and then we said, okay, today I'm an adult. Today I live on my own. Today I'm going to analyze all the beliefs that I have and the advantages and disadvantages of them. And today I'm going to determine whether I should speak my mind or not speak my mind and whether it's okay to raise your voice or not raise your voice. No. That's just how we were raised. But now I am faced with a situation where I actually need to think about it. okay? Because I don't like getting in fights. So is my way better? Or is her way better? Or is it simply that's just what was installed upon us? Maybe neither of them are better. Ultimately, for me personally, I decided that although raising my voice has actually kind of become a way to relieve stress for me, that's not necessarily the most effective option. I've relied on it, but that doesn't mean that it's the best way to do things. I need to be able to communicate without raising my voice. It seems a little bit of a paradox, but I've actually been able to relieve stress from getting angry. If I get mad, right, I can kind of let that stress out, I can let the tension go, and then I totally forget about it, right? I can yell and 10 minutes later, I forgot that I was even upset. Yeah, not so much for her. So, but then I had to reevaluate and say, listen, maybe I got used to this as a child and as a kid growing up, but I can intellectually look at it and say, this is not the most efficient way to do things. I need to be able to express my opinions, and I need to be able to release tension in a way that does not involve getting temporarily upset or raising my voice. Now, of course, I still slip up from time to time, but I'm making a conscious effort to improve. And that's what this is all about, right? It's being better than you were yesterday. And she admits that her tendency to not express herself, to not tell me what she's really thinking, probably isn't a very healthy way for, her to live her life or for us to be in a successful relationship long term. And she's working on her communication issues as well. This is a real life example, you know, at least for me, for how we have certain values and beliefs which are essentially placed upon us as children and why we need to relook at them as adults and say, hey, does this still make sense? Or did this even ever make sense? And even if it does make sense, is it the best possible answer? Because sometimes something can still make sense, but that doesn't mean that there's not another better answer out there. So let's go back a bit to when we were talking about setting a goal and achieving it, but you've already raised that goal, right? So you're not happy. Why do you think you do that? Here's a better question. What would you have to believe in order to go through that process? Do you think you might believe that if you allow yourself to celebrate and feel successful, that you will lose your drive? The problem is that this is a never-ending cycle. You know, you're not really consciously doing, kind of thinking about it in your head when you're just, you know, you're just looking at the short term, right? You're trying to go from 1 to 2, and then you get to 2, and already you've switched it to 3. But what happens is when you get to 3, we're going to switch it to 4. And when you get to 4, it's already going to be switched to 5 or 6. For those who are lucky, they'll eventually end up, you know, super high. They're up at number 37, but they're still unhappy because by the time they reach 37 or 38, they already want to be at number 40. It's a never-ending cycle. They still, even after they've achieved success, at least what everybody else would consider success, they do not allow themselves to feel like a success. So let me ask you this. If a person achieves great things, and I'm talking external great things, right? They make money. They put out a business that's successful. If a person can do that, but they are unhappy, if they're depressed, if they're not satisfied with life, if they're not emotionally fulfilled, is that person successful? Is that a successful human being? On paper, right, if you're writing a news article about him, he's probably successful, but I wouldn't consider him a successful human being, regardless of how much money, fame, or power that person may have, right? If they're not happy, if they're not emotionally fulfilled. Now, of course, they're successful in their career. If we kind of put it in a box and say, hey, are they successful in their career or successful in a specific aspect of their life? Of course. But that's different than being a successful human being, because a human being is not just one aspect, right? There's more than one side to us. And why do I think that? That's because I include happiness, right? And you don't have to use the word happiness, right? I was kind of saying a couple that, you know, satisfaction, emotionally fulfilled, whatever it is that you want to, you know, a lot of the words interchangeable. But I include that positive feeling of self-worth in my personal definition of what it is to be a successful human being. So let's think this problem through a little bit. Is it possible for someone to be both happy and extremely driven to still achieve more even after they've achieved greatness? Is it possible to have both those things? Well, obviously the answer is yes. There are many ultra successful and simultaneously very happy people. The example that I like to use, a guy that I like, Richard Branson. When you hear that dude speak, doesn't he just have a passion for life? It just exudes from him, right? He's got that big old British grin on his face. He's British, right? I'm pretty sure he's British. Okay. If he's something else, I'm pretty sure the dude's British though. He's got that big old grin on his face, right? And yet, all right, he's a self-made multi-billionaire, right? His Virgin company owns over 400 companies. And yet the dude can just sit in an interview, crack jokes, right? He has that positive energy just radiating from him. And this is a man who has such great thirst for adventure. When you look at a person like that, how is it even possible for you to still hold a belief that says, well, if I allow myself to be happy, then I'll lose my drive? Yeah, maybe if you have that belief, it'll be true, but it doesn't make sense. The facts don't line up. So what would be some new beliefs or desires that you could put in place of the old one? How about the belief that you find great pleasure in progress? How about the belief that you can work more effectively and efficiently and for longer hours if you are happy and full of passion and energy? How about the belief that your brain will develop a stronger pleasurable association to accomplishment if you actually allow yourself to feel pleasure when you accomplish something? What an idea! Let's look at that one a little bit. If you do not allow yourself to experience pleasure in achieving goals, why would your brain continue to do that? I mean, really, how long do you think your brain is going to continue beating itself up, working super hard to achieve a goal if it's not going to get any satisfaction out of it? It's simple. The brain, if it's not receiving pleasure, it's not going to continue to do that task. However, if every time you set out a goal, big or small, and accomplish it, you reward your brain with great happiness and pleasure, right? So, I mean, of course, if it's a really big goal, then you can celebrate a little bit more. If it's a small thing, you know, you don't go on a week-long vacation if it's just, right? But just look, it's a small goal, right? You set out a small goal, right? But you throw your hands up in the air, you yell, yes! Right? You take a small period of time just to close your eyes. It can just be a minute or two, right? You close your eyes and you experience, you create the experience of complete 100% euphoria in your brain for accomplishing something that you set out to do. If you did that, right, just for small things, for little daily tasks, little to-dos, and if you did that, do you think that over time, your brain might associate more pleasure to actually completing the tasks? Do you think that your brain might over time be a little bit more motivated to work? See, we can change our own beliefs just by becoming conscious of them and thinking about them. Now, it's not